Thanks for listening to another episode of Project Zion. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts the Restoration offers for today's world. Project Zion is sponsored by the Latter-day Seekers team from Community of Christ.
It's another episode of the Project Zion podcast, and I'm your host, Brittany Mangelson. And today we have on Monica Bradford, who is a member of Community of Christ in the Lee's Summit area. So welcome, Monica. Do you want to introduce yourselves a little bit to our listeners?
Sure. Hi, Brittany. Thank you for having me here with you today. I'm Monica, and I'm education background. I was a teacher for 12 years. I have my degree in elementary education with kind of an early childhood specialty, and taught for a while, mostly in first grade. But then, about 6 years ago now, I started staying home with my two boys. So I have boys that are 2 years apart, and they are now about to turn, 12 and 10 this month, which is crazy. And I work part-time from home with them now and spend a lot of time doing the mom thing, running between soccer practices and school stuff and all that kind of thing, as well as being a part of our church community and serving in my congregation and my mission center as need arises. So that's just kind of a little bit about me and what I do day to day.
Awesome. Thank you. So what we're going to talk about today is spiritual formation, specifically with children and families. So Monica has been involved with planning and directing a retreat that's going to happen in the temple in April of 2017 when we're recording this. Is that right? It's happening in
yes.
April? Okay.
Yes.
It's a topic that I have been interested in for a really long time. I'm also a mom of three young kids, and the idea of spirituality and spiritual formation for children is something that I've never really thought too much about, but I'm starting to think more about as my kids are asking questions and as we do spiritual practices in our congregation and just all these different ways that we can integrate children in. And so I'm really excited to hear more about the retreat and to hear more about Monica and her, just the way that she implements these things with her own family and congregations around her. So, let's have a little bit of background on your involvement with the church. So what was spiritual formation like for you when you were a kid or growing up, or were spiritual practices a thing? Were they something that were on your mind? Just talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So my family, you know, has been a part of the church for generations. My parents were both raised in the church, and I don't know a time when church was not a part of my life. You know, we went to church every Sunday morning. We went to prayer services on Wednesday nights, Sunday school, camp, you know, all the normal bits and pieces and trappings of church. But I don't remember spiritual formations. Now, this was going to be in the 80s when I was a kid, late 70s, early 80s. I don't remember spiritual formation, spiritual practices being a particular conversation that was really happening on a widespread basis anyway. I think it was starting in certain circles, but it definitely wasn't a part of my day-to-day life, even though church was, and you know, I think spirituality was still woven in there. It wasn't something we had a name for, and we weren't particularly doing spiritual practices in my home growing up. In fact, and maybe it's just my memory. I know we talked about God. I know we probably had prayer, not probably, we had prayer time, but I don't have like memories of this specific types of rituals that we did in our home. You know, I can think of rituals at church and things that we participated when we were at church, but at home, it was more just kind of woven in understanding of who we were, that we were Christian people, that we were Community of Christ. But the spiritual formation part, was not really on my radar screen anyway. And I first started kind of hearing about it a little bit more when I was a young adult, just newly out of college. And that was mainly because my mom, who had been a nurse my whole life, was her career. And around 2000, in the time of Transformation 2000, she became one of our Transformation 2000 ministers for the church. And at that time, she went back to school, went to seminary, and got a degree, and had a specialty and a focus on spiritual formation, and became a spiritual director. And so that was when I started to kind of hear the buzzwords a little bit and hear a little bit more about what spiritual formation was, what spiritual practices were. But even then, it was just sort of kind of on the outskirts. It wasn't something I was experiencing day to day myself. I would take classes when my mom would offer something in our area, or like at a reunion, she would do different trainings and stuff. I would usually participate, and it interested me, but that was kind of where it stopped. I didn't pick it up and do a whole lot with it at that point. And it wasn't until I had kids that it started to really come to a place where I felt like I needed something more. And I don't know if you've experienced this, Brittany, but I was looking at my two small children. At the time, they were about 3 and 1. And I'm thinking, okay, I have this background in education. I know what to do if I need to teach my children how to read and how to write. And I know how to teach them to count and add. I even have an idea of how to discipline, because I have training in all those things with my education background. But I have no idea how to teach them about God and prayer. And because I felt like I didn't have those answers myself, I didn't know enough about what I was doing. How can I teach this to my child? And I started to feel like I need more information. And me being the person I am, I started like wanting to research. I want a book. Give me a good book that's going to tell me what to do. Tell me how to teach my kids how to know more about God. And there just wasn't a lot out there. And there still isn't a ton out there on that topic. And so I went to my mom. It was like this time of year. And I said to her, you know, I know about how kids learn and how their brain develops and all that stuff. And you know about spiritual practices. What if we worked together to come up with something? And I said to her, you know, even if it's only for me, even if nobody else ever sees it, I think it would be worth it. And so we spent some time, and that was, gosh, maybe almost a decade ago, pulling together a resource of some kind of trainings, like a 4-session class that started to touch on these topics. Like, how do you do spiritual practices with kids? How do you start to engage in these conversations at home and help develop a sense of spirituality with your children and as a family? And that was sort of where my journey with this began, because I just wanted to know how to do more with my kids. And I wasn't finding it out there to help me. I couldn't find a book to help me. I couldn't find classes or trainings to help me. So we kind of wrote our own at that point in time. And that started this journey for me, where I've been really drawn to learning more and more about spiritual formation. And because of my background, the lens I always look at it when I learn something new is, how could I do this with my family? How could I do this with kids and teach other people to do it in their homes as well?
Yeah, I identify with that a lot. I know that as I have kind of moved along on my faith journey, that I was really impacted by my children. And that's kind of what made me make the shifts that I have in my faith, because I had kids. And so then once I did that, I was like, well, now what?
Yeah.
And I'm hesitant to say this, but I have really not taught my kids much at all right now at this point, because I have still been figuring out where I sit with things and how do you articulate what you don't know to children who want an answer, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard. And so I think one reason why I'm drawn to spiritual practices with kids is because it's kind of more hands-on learning or experiential learning, that we don't have to have dogmatic answers of, okay, this is what we believe, but we can experience God through this moment that we have together. So, yeah, I think it's really cool that you just, you know, made your own thing a decade ago.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think all parents start to feel that way. Like, we feel unqualified to have to have these answers and these discussions. And I still feel that way. And I talk a lot when I teach on this topic about, there being no guilt, because I know some of this stuff and I've done some trainings on it and I written some materials about it. And yet I still am not great at it every single day. There are still times where I'm like, man, we've really gotten out of the habit of doing a spiritual practice each day or doing prayer time at all, you know, just any of it, because life gets crazy. And so it's never too late to kind of restart and try again and have these conversations with our kids. And something you said stuck out to me because I've been doing a lot of reading lately, and there's a couple books that I'm really interested in right now, but one of them is called Listening to Children on a Spiritual Journey. And it talked about the different ideas about how we impart God in the knowledge about God to our kids. And there's this one concept of kind of like a production line, like they're sort of raw material and we're like implanting on them the different beliefs and things, like they're this blank slate that we're just going to fill with information. And then there's this idea of like a greenhouse where they're this seed that we help nurture and develop. And I think I kind of leaned toward that greenhouse idea, but this particular author is holding up this concept of really being co-pilgrims on the journey together, that we are each sharing and learning, the children and the parents or adults in the child's life. So it's not that we have to have answers that we give them. It's that we're journeying on this journey together and that they have knowledge to impart to us just as much as we have knowledge to share with them. So, which I think we all know as parents with kids, you know, we learn so much from their wonder and their experiences, and the things that they say sometimes shock you with the depth that they have. And so I really liked that idea of being co-pilgrims, that I don't have to have answers, that we're journeying together and that we are helping one another grow and develop as we learn.
That's really beautiful. And I think that, well, one of the questions I was going to ask you, and we can talk about this too, but was just kind of, I guess, divorcing religious dogma from spirituality. And I think that you kind of answered it, maybe even in part, and your answer with that, that children are teaching us, that we haven't put religious dogma into their brains already for them to work through, that they are, you know, fertile soil, if you will, and that they, while we work together, can help us figure our faith out as well. I really like how you articulated that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think organized religion certainly plays a role in spiritual development, but I don't think it's exclusive. I think that spirituality is, and some of the reading and research I've read shows that spirituality is innate. You know, it's in there regardless, and it can be nurtured or or cut off, but it's there whether or not there is an organized religion piece. And I think that dogma certainly happens, but my goal has always been with my children has been to teach them to be open to the questions. Because I certainly had times as a child where I heard something at church or in Sunday school that didn't quite gel with what I thought in my head. And I had those questions, and I had a home that I could come home and be like, okay, here's what I'm hearing, and I don't know if that's right. And, you know, that conversation was welcome and open in my home. And so I've always tried to honor that with my children when they ask me questions, not to say, here's the answer, because I don't know answers, but to say, you know, there's some people think this and some people think this, and here's kind of where I fall, but I've changed my mind over the years as I learn. And it's going to be to you to decide what you believe, and give them that power to own their own beliefs and what they think, and make it a conversation, not a, you know, right and wrong answer. Just the questions are part of the journey, and I think are important. They're what drive you forward to want to learn more and experience more.
I'm just so impressed by this, because it's so different from my church experience growing up, I guess. And so I'm almost, I mean, I don't want to say shocked, but almost shocked to hear somebody say these things, because, I mean, it's where I'm at as well, but just to to know that it's supported, you know, by a community that it, that values questioning with children and forging your own spiritual path. I'm a big fan. So,
well, it takes the pressure off as a parent because you don't have to have the answers.
Yeah. You
can ask the questions and let the questions be questions and say, yeah, that's a great question. I wonder, what do you think? You know, just turn it back around and say, and just let them explore their own thoughts and beliefs. And that doesn't mean that I don't still share what I think too, but I try to always frame it in the idea of that it's okay to question. And I don't know. I don't know for sure. Here's what I think right now, but that's changed as I've grown and learned more. So I think it's helpful, and you never know what they'll come up with if you let them lead the discussion a little bit.
Yeah. I think that might be a theme that I need to implement in a lot of aspects of my parenting, is just letting them, you know, just relaxing a little bit, letting them guide the conversation. Yeah, it's beautiful.
I think that's the teacher in me a little bit. You know, that's the nature of a teacher, is that you're trying to help your children or students or children learn and develop on their own. So yeah. Just take that teacher mindset.
Yeah. And I don't have an education background. So maybe that's why I'm having like a million aha moments right now. I'm like, this is, you know, revelation right here. So, I'm a fan. So I guess my next question would be, is how do you help foster the love for questioning and the love for spiritual, I guess, rootedness? Because I think that, I don't know. I think that when we question, when we're also doing spiritual practices kind of hand in hand, or just connecting to the divine, whatever the divine looks like to you at that point in your life, then it might give your questions more depth and more understanding, and you might be open more to answers, whatever those answers are, or open to sitting in the mystery, I guess. Mm-hmm. So how do you foster that appreciation for these things in kids?
I think the first step is to leave space for it. If you never leave space and time for it to happen, then it's less likely that it's going to occur. And I think we often, you know, our lives are busy. Kids can be crazy and high energy. But my experience is that kids also really value opportunity for quiet and connection. I mean, if I think back to we foster those moments of a read aloud at night or before bed, and you're snuggling with your child and reading a story and you're kind of quiet together. We foster that time, and it's very similar. And how and when you do it can vary based on your family and your needs. We've done it at different times of day in my house, but I noticed at a very young age that when we intentionally set aside time to have this sort of quiet time together, that my kids just ate it up and started even doing it a little bit on their own. So for us, when we first began the process of doing a spiritual practice as a family, we did what's called the prayer of examine, which even be more simplified for kids in kind of that idea of sharing a high and a low from the day, which is how we framed it for them at the time, as they were 3 and 1. I mean, my 1-year-old didn't even talk yet, and we would leave space for him to babble. I would just ask him, how was your day? What was the best part about today? And he would kind of just make baby noises, and we would leave space for that, you know, just the time for him to share in the conversation. And my 2-year-old, who could talk, noticed that all of us were important, that we all had something to share. And we did it as a family devotion. We shared our high and our low from the day, and then we prayed about it. And that was something that we have come back to. It seems to be the one that when we restart and we're like, I'm feeling a need to do again these spiritual practices and get them more solidly in our life, that seems to be the one that we all come back to the most often. But I also had you can buy handheld labyrinths. And so they're called finger labyrinths. And I had a couple in my house when my kids were little. I still have them. And I used to, when they were really like tantruming or upset or fighting with one another, I would have them sit with one of the labyrinths and I would say, I want you to trace it a couple times. And when you're ready, then we can talk, like just a calm down moment before we would talk through whatever the problem was that was going on. And I started to notice that they would do it on their own. They would go pull it out, and they still do sometimes, you know, it's a decade later, and they'll still go pull out the figure labyrinth sometimes and sit with it and just trace it. So I think when you give permission and space for it to be okay to be quiet and just connect with that love, either with each other or with God or your own inner voice, when you just kind of make it a part of life, even if it doesn't happen every day, even if it's a sometimes, they start to go back to that as a place of comfort. And when they don't know what to do or what to say, they go back to those things that they've learned in their childhood that can be a time of quiet and connection with God, even if they don't have the words for it quite yet.
I love how the two examples that you just shared were just woven into everyday life. I mean, those are questions that I ask my kids, you know, tell me a good thing that happened at school. Tell me a bad thing that happened at school. But I've never really thought to set it aside and set it apart as a spiritual practice before. And I love that you involved prayer in that as well. And that you left space for your 1-year-old that couldn't talk yet. That's really cool.
Well, and we did it as the adults too. So it wasn't only children sharing with us, it was us sharing with them in whatever was appropriate. But then they felt connected to what was going on in our lives as well. It had some really powerful moments over the years as a family when we've been good about doing that practice together.
Well, and I just think of the understanding that a conversation like that would bring. I mean, there have been times where my 6-year-old twins will come home from school and they're just immediately so angry and they're so grumpy and they just start screaming at their little brother or at me or whoever. And then I say, you know, what happened at school today? And they've gone through some rough stuff at school. And it's, you know, you see that play out in their behavior. And so, I mean, I'm just thinking with this, that setting time aside, maybe, you know, right when they get home from school and just starting off so everybody knows where we're at, we can talk about what happened, we can talk about the good things, talk about the bad things, and then pray about it. I think that that's a good way to connect as a family unit, and then just continue throughout your day. And I wouldn't have necessarily realized that that was a spiritual practice before, so I'm glad you lifted that up.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things we did to kind of set it aside as a special time was we each have one of those little tea light, battery operated tea lights. And we would take it and kind of turn on the light, and each person would hold it. And, you know, I had little kids that were 1 and 3 or 2 and 4, and they would throw them or be silly. It's not that it was always perfectly spiritual, yeah. You know, they're kids. But our practice was to hold the light and just kind of breathe for a couple minutes before I would start the question. And as they've gotten older, the questions can change too, because, you know, when they're little, it might be high and low from your day, best part, worst part of your day. But as they got older, I've started to ask, where did you see God today? Or where did you feel separate from God? And turn it into a little bit more of a spiritual question as they get age appropriate for that. So it's a practice that can grow and change as your family does.
So what else have you done? Do you have more tricks up your sleeve?
We've done several things. We've done lots of trials. I've always felt like I was a kid that struggled with verbal prayer. Like, I was always worried that I would say the wrong thing or it wouldn't. I had people in my family that can pray. Oh, they can pray. And it's like beautiful poetry when they pray. And so it was intimidating to me to pray out loud. And one of the things I've loved about spiritual practices is that it gives me different ways to pray when I feel like I don't have the words. Kids, that they would have something that they could fall back on, a way that they could connect with God, even if they didn't have the words to speak, to know what to say, what was on their heart. So we've tried a lot of different things, and some of them connect more than others. We have done holding in the light. I actually printed up pictures, small, like wallet size photos of different people in our family and close friends. And I'll give the kids a tea light, and they'll pick a photo of someone that they want to hold in the light. And they literally hold the photo and the candle in the same hand. and just let the light from the candle kind of shine on that person and just hold that person up in prayer and imagine them being surrounded by God's light. We've also done the Christian prayer. Yeah. In the mornings before school, in fact, that one's been one we've been doing more recently. As they leave the house, they will say the mission prayer. And a couple times they've heard it at church and my younger son will be like, "Mommy, they just said our prayer," you know, like they have this ownership of it. And I'm like, "It's not just ours, buddy. Lots of people use this prayer." But, so we, you know, we've done a little bit of that, just that idea of being more present to where God's leading you in the day. I mentioned the labyrinth. They love doing the labyrinth, both the finger labyrinth. And now they've had the opportunity to walk a physical labyrinth a couple times. And my older one really feels connected with that one. We've also done just, you know, some kind of art, spiritual practices with art where they've done, mandalas, coloring mandalas and just sitting together in quiet and coloring. With those. And I've done a little bit of work with scripture with them and, some sort of like what's called a Lectio Divina or dwelling in the word a little bit with Bible stories with them when they were younger. We had a Bible box that, had different pieces in it that they could use to act out scripture stories. So like I went to Michael's and got some different animals to have pairs of animals. And I got like some netting and some fish and like a blue and green napkin, cloth napkin that could be used for background, just little background things. You could use to make a river or a mountain or whatever, and cotton balls for sheep or just, you know, any little things that you could use to act out a scripture story and put it in a box. And then when we were reading scripture stories, they would go through and they could act them out with the little pieces so that they could be a little bit more drawn in to the story. Just things like that. So it's kind of small things, but we tried to incorporate, like you said, into our daily life. And I wasn't doing all of them all the time. It was kind of ebb and flow based on where I was feeling. I wanted more of something in my life. And then I would just I'm better about doing things. It's like eating wheat bread. You know, you want to eat white bread or sugar cereal, but you eat the good stuff because your kids, that's what you want your kids to do. I'm better about being spiritual when I'm doing it with my children than I am when I'm just doing it for myself.
I can relate to that a lot. So through all of this, and I guess as your kids have gotten older, I mean, you've kind of touched on this a little bit, but what specific things have your children taught you, about spiritual, formation or just spirituality in general as you have implemented these small practices in your everyday life?
I think that the thing that stands out to me the most is their sense of wonder and just connectedness to the divine around them. And that watching that in them helps me see it more in my own life and look for those, you know, that kind of light of God that sort of shimmers around experiences. Like they, you know, when you go on a walk with a kid and they want to spend 5 minutes on the sidewalk staring at the ants as they carry little bits of food because it's so amazing to them, their sense of wonder about this world and about creation, that's opened my eyes to those moments too. So I think that for me, the thing I learned from them the most is just how aware they are of the divine in the world around them. And even if they can't put that into words, when I see it on their faces or I see them experiencing these things, it opens it up more inside me. And I have valued that a lot about them. And of course, I've grown and developed just based on the questions they ask sometimes. And it makes me think more about, well, what do I believe about that? How do I feel about that topic or that idea? And that's been, it just helps me go deeper into my own thoughts instead of staying on the surface level of go to church, do the tasks I'm there to do, say hi to all the people, make sure I have all the things on my checklist done, and then come home. They help me be more in the moment and more in experiencing the present moment of the divine in my life when I open myself up to that.
Yeah, I like what you said. And I think that when I think of my own children, they're just hyper aware and hypersensitive about the world around them. And they're constantly asking questions, and I'm having to reflect and, you know, try to foster that questioning and that growth. But they definitely keep you on your toes. Yeah. So I appreciate your comments. How do you think that this plays into congregational life? I mean, if you have children who are being, I guess, spiritually fostered and nurtured at home, how does that develop their giftedness in the context of a congregation?
Yeah, their giftedness, I think, is already there. What I believe we're called as congregations to do is recognize it and give it space and honor and value, in the roles, you know, where we are at church. When I was a kid, I remember it was about middle school age, and my mother was leading the, worship team at that time. And I decided I wanted to plan worships, and I just started as a 12 or 13 year old planning worships because I felt called to do that. And that was honored where I was attending at the time. And I think that that's what we're called to do when a child is feeling, a passion about something, to honor that and encourage that and let that be valuable in and of itself, instead of trying to mold and shape it into our way of having how we've always done things, but to value and honor what they bring to the table, but also to consider how we do things. And are we assuming that we are only here to minister to and worship for adults, or are we really opening our minds to how do we engage all ages? I think that it's really important to think about how we can be more intergenerational. And I know that not every moment and not everything is always going to work that way. But if we're more intentional about at least considering the question, how we can engage all ages in what we do, then we're creating space for these children to develop into amazing disciples, because it's already innate in them. We just need to offer that space. And some of the reading I've done talks a lot about what one of the authors calls a field of love that grows and encourages these children in their innate spiritual. Sexuality. And that field of love can be your family. It can be a community of people that might be your congregation. It might be a neighborhood of people you live with, or another group of people that you're a part of. But my goal is always to expand the field of love that is raising my children as broad as I can. I want them to feel connected and important in this community that has been so important in my life. So I think that as congregations, that's our call. How can we expand that field of love for the children that are in our circles?
So do you have specific ideas of how to do that, or how to implement children in worship or church activities?
I think it's important to have elements for children in each service. I personally always want my children in worship with me. I want them there hearing and a part of our worship. So for me, that's always been important, that I belong to a congregation that's intergenerational and has many ages. One thing we do in our congregation is that we have a children's moment before each sermon, and they try as a congregation to have it connected somehow to obviously the theme or the scripture. And then we have some tables in our congregation that's kind of set up off to the side, where there's an extension activity that might be a blank piece of paper where they're asked to draw something that connects back to whatever the topic was, or do a small little activity that's quiet. They aren't interrupting. But what I've noticed as we've implemented that in our own congregation is that there are some children that will sit there for the rest of the service, you know, drawing or working on whatever the activity is. And my own two children, when I ask them, what I notice is they're actually listening better to the sermon, because they're doing this activity that's connected to kind of the topic, but as they're coloring or drawing or writing about whatever it is that the activity is, they're connecting back in with what that scripture was, that, hey, I learned that scripture in Sunday school, and then we're talking about it here in church, and now I'm doing this activity. And it's amazing to me what they pick up on that we don't always realize when they're in there with us. And it's just sort of setting this experience, making it available to them, and sort of the expectation that they're there with us and they're an important part of what we do. And just asking them to do roles. I mean, they might say no, but asking them to say prayers. And I let my children write their own prayers. I don't write them for them. We talk about it and I'll offer suggestions, but often it's their own words and their own thoughts when they're asked to offer a prayer at church or to be a part of different roles. And in our congregation, we've just been open to that, to letting the kids, be a part of the service in a variety of ways and offer whatever ministry they bring and value it for what it is, even if it might not be the words I would have used or the way I would have done it, that it's still valuable. What they have to offer is valuable.
Yeah, our congregation, we've implemented some of that as well. And we've also had the kids be ushers during the DGR. And I know when my family does that, it gets interesting real fast. But
but it's still valuable.
It is, and they get excited. My kids actually helped me do the DGR just this last Sunday, and my little twins were thrilled. And it was clumsy, but it worked. And I like it because it makes them feel part of the service, and they were specifically paying attention, you know, for when mom goes up and starts doing DGR, and they knew exactly what to do and they felt really a part of it. And then my 3-year-old came up and grabbed the microphone and started talking in it, which was, you know, again, sloppy.
The way it is. Yeah. We have to let go of our adult ideas of perfection.
I know. And
let the value of what the children have to offer be what it is, because they will be silly and they will do things that are not the way we would have planned it. Yeah. And yet it still brings such ministry.
It makes people stay awake, I guess, which is... What will the Mangelsons do today? So what about unchurched people? I mean, I know we talked about it a little bit, that religion and spirituality are not married together always. They're two separate entities. And so I know a lot of people who have maybe left organized religion in general, but they still have kids that they want to be engaged in some sort of, even if it's not articulated as a higher power, just something outside of themselves, just being, you know, mindful of the universe and humanity and, you know, human connection and all these things. And so I do think that there's value to spirituality to maybe unchurched people. Do you have anything to speak to that?
Well, I think it goes back to some of the things we've already talked about. I mean, being open to the questions. And I think the place where it becomes hardest is if there's this sense of, I had a struggle with spirituality and religion as a kid, and so I don't want to talk about it. You know, that's where I think it gets harder for kids to kind of navigate, because it's already in them, this connection to creation, to something divine. It's kind of in them anyway. And so when they have these questions that are sort of shut down, then that's where it becomes more difficult. But even if we don't go to church, but we're open to the discussion and the questions and the experiences, and letting our children sort of co-pilgrim, you know, be co-pilgrims on the journey with us, we are open to, a lot of people find connection in nature and taking their kids on nature walks, and, or in, you know, if you're a family that feels more connected to acts of service and helping others, doing that as a family and finding ways to connect into that together, you're still developing that spiritual sense in your child, even if you're not going to church on Sunday. I don't think that's a requirement of developing that sort of innate spiritual connection. And what some of the research says is that it really only takes one person in the child's life that can help kind of connect them into that. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a parent, although it's probably going to be strongest if it's a parent, but a lot of times it's a grandparent, or maybe even a coach or a scout leader, or, you know, there are other places that other people, that field of love that we talked about, that can kind of help develop that child's sense of connection to something greater than them. And that is just going to be a lifelong gift to them. And if it can be the parents, that's awesome. But, you know, if you're a grandparent and you're thinking about wanting to help connect your child, your grandchild into that world, there are still ways to do that. There's still ways to have those conversations and deepen those relationships. It doesn't have to be about an organized religion.
Exactly. One thing that I should have asked you earlier, but what about meditation? Have you had any experience with trying to help your kids meditate? I think that can be a tough one for adults to do. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know if you've attempted, or if you had any thoughts on that spiritual practice or working into it, just this, you know, silent sense of being and just sitting in silence. Have you found success with that?
We've tried it a little bit with my older one, more just focusing on, not even, I guess I've done it with both, focusing on breathing. We've talked about that. I even find it hard to meditate into silence. And, so for me, I have a phrase, so like a breath prayer. I've done more of that with my children, where you breathe in and out a word or a phrase that you're kind of just focusing and thinking on. They're going to do that way shorter, at least initially, than, well, I mean, adults necessarily can't necessarily do it for long periods of time either. But the more you practice, the better you are at it. And sometimes it's just a matter of modeling. If a child sees you sitting and quietly breathing, and you talk a little bit, here's what mommy's going to do. I'm going to breathe in and out. And as I do inside my head, I'm going to think about a word or a phrase. And every breath, I'm just going to think that word. And they will do it for a while until they won't. And sometimes they'll sit and snuggle with you even longer, and maybe they're meditating and maybe they're not, but they're at least getting that kind of experience and example and connection. And often if you talk about it later, you say, what were you thinking about? And what word did you choose? And was it easy? Was it hard? What do you think about, how do you feel about that experience? You'll be amazed at what they come up with and what they say. And maybe it'll be a connection for them and maybe it won't. Different people connect to different spiritual practices. But I've always felt like it's my job as a parent to try to introduce as much as I can, and something will stick and connect, and hopefully, and it'll be what's right for that child in that moment. But at least they'll have a wide range of experiences.
And I think that it's good to remember that it can and should be a wide range of experiences. And so if something that I identify with doesn't work for my kids, I don't need to have a panic attack or think that the world is mm-hmm. ending, or that I'm doing it wrong. And, you know, parenting,
right.
Like you said, there's no guilt involved. That something will stick, whether that's, you know, to whatever degree that ends up being, or at least the lasting impression of the effort, even, I think, mm-hmm. will stick.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the retreat a little bit. I don't know a ton about it. I know that it's for families and it will be happening in Independence. So let us know about it.
Yeah. So I'm actually super excited about this retreat. It's the kind of thing I wish was happening 10 years ago when I was in this place of exploring. It's called Encountering God at Home. And it's a focus on how you do spiritual formation with children, youth, and families. And it's happening April 7th through the 9th. In Independence. And we actually have worked really hard to try to keep the cost of this retreat as low as possible so that it can be as accessible as possible for families. It's $50 for adults and only $15 for children and youth. And there are a couple of meals involved in that as well. So it's a super low cost event, hopefully. And we really want as many families to come as possible, but it's not exclusive for families. It's not only for people with children that can come. We are hoping to have, you know, anyone that is interested in this idea, how they can help people in their congregation, maybe youth ministers or Sunday school teachers or just priesthood members that want to work with families and are interested in exploring this idea. more with the children, youth, and families in their congregation. It's open to everyone. And what I think is really exciting about this retreat is that we've worked really intentionally about it sort of weaving in and out between times and moments where we are together as an intergenerational community doing activities together of all ages, and then also weaving back out into sort of individualized tracks where there's a track of activities and lessons and learning for children, a track for youth, and then a track for the adults. So all throughout the weekend, we're kind of moving back and forth between intentional intergenerational activities all together, as well as more individualized learning that's age appropriate for the different groups. And I'm super excited about the different things that we've come up with to share throughout the weekend. We're going to, you know, look about how do we talk to children and youth about God and prayer, how those questions, how we can encourage the questions and talk with our children and help them nurture the questions they have that might impact their own spiritual journey. And how spirituality can be part of our life for families in our home. And we hope to not only give kind of like the background information about it, but as much practical experiences that you could take home and try for yourself as possible. So we're excited about it. We hope to have as many people attend as possible. We do have a bit of limited spaces, and the registration deadline is coming up pretty quickly. It's actually March 10th is our registration deadline. It's about a month ahead of a retreat so that we can be sure we have enough leaders for the children's portion, that we have all the adults we need to help run that side of it. But we're really excited for this retreat and this opportunity to share with children and youth and families and help them develop this idea of how do you bring God into your home in a more intentional way so that you're helping you're journeying together with your children on this spiritual journey, that you feel like you have some resources in your toolkit that will help you get there.
That sounds really amazing. And I love that it's happening in the temple, and the symbolism behind that and the journey that it is, the journey that families take together to figure this all out, and that it's intergenerational, and that there's things for young and old. And like you said, youth ministers and teachers and whoever has an interest in and with and for children.
So, absolutely.
So I guess to wrap up, are there any resources? I know you've mentioned a couple of books. I guess, do you want to name any of these resources, or are there websites or podcasts that you are interested in or that have been beneficial to you in figuring all of this out?
Yeah. So my favorite book right now, and I'm actually not even fully done with it, but there's this new book out called The Spiritual Child. And it's the subtitle is The New Science on Parenting for Health and Lifelong Thriving. It's by a woman named Lisa Miller, who's a PhD psychologist. And she's done a lot of actual research over the last two decades about spirituality and how that develops in children. And the book is just really neat because, first of all, I didn't know that this kind of research was going on. And it was really exciting to me to see that there is some data that shows how strong this innate spirituality is in children. And she does a really good job of not only sharing the science behind what she's found through the studies she's done, but also how that spirituality develops over the ages of, you know, the different age brackets of children, and gives very practical ideas in it, with like, here's some ways that you can words that you can use to talk about this with your kids. Here are some activities that you could do to help develop this idea with the different age ranges. And so I found it a really useful book that shared, you know, not only the science, but also some practical applications for how you can do some of this at home. So it's my current favorite. But I also have another book called Listening to Children on the Spiritual Journey, and it's a guidance for those who teach and nurture. And it's by Catherine Stonehouse and Scotty May. And they've also done some clinical research on how we listen to children and how children's thoughts and ideas about God develop. And I've really enjoyed that one too, because it gives some examples of the different ways kids think and grow as they learn and the things that they say, you know, through their research projects that they've done. And I find it really comforting to start to say, okay, yeah, my kids like that too. And oh, I understand what that's like. And it even has some ideas in here about how you can incorporate some of this into congregational life. So I found that really helpful too. So those are two of my current favorite resources on this topic.
Thank you. Those both sound really good, and I will likely be picking them up. So do you have any final thoughts for us? Or I guess I do want to know and to tell the people listening how to register for the retreat if they're interested in that. But then, yeah, do you have any just wrap up final thoughts to go along with that? Or
yes, absolutely. If you're wanting to register for the retreat, and we'd love to have you join us, you will go to the spiritualformationcenter.org. And on the Spiritual Formation Center page, there is a, right on the homepage, there's a link for registering for the retreat. Just be sure to register before March 10th, because that registration deadline is on March 10th. And I guess the only other thing I would say is, you know, it's easy. We do guilt really easy. And I know I talked about this a little bit before, but it's easy to look and be like, my kids are already teenagers. It's too late. I've missed it. Or I didn't do this good as a parent. I should have done. It's really easy to get caught up in that. And I just want to encourage everyone listening to know that it's never too late to start. I mean, I didn't start spiritual formation or spiritual practices till I was an adult, and they still have deep meaning in my life. So it's never too late to start opening the door to these conversations with the people that we love, whether our children are grown adults or whether our children are teenagers or still in the toddler stage. We can open the door to having these conversations and leaving space for finding deeper ways to connect with God. And it's all okay. There's no guilt. We're journeying together and learning as we go. And our children are journeying with us. And if you open yourself up to it, there's just so much that you can learn and so many ways that your relationship with your child, with your family, and with God can deepen.
I really appreciate that, because I'm kind of a guilt-ridden person. So so just knowing that we can start wherever we're at, and I love the idea of just implementing it into your everyday life. So it's not necessarily a drastic life-altering change that you have to make. It's just do what you're already doing, but just maybe be more intentional about it. And so thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Yes, thank you.
The views expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official views of the Latter-day Seekers team or of Community of Christ. The music has been provided by Ben Howington. You can find his music at mormonguitar.com.